Working remotely, where you are shouldn't dictate what you do. Work from the road by turning your vehicle into a reliable high-speed data Wi-Fi hotspot with AT&T in-car Wi-Fi. On the network that covers more roads than any other carrier, take your work on the road and AT&T will be there to keep you connected. Connect up to 10 devices and stream conference calls, finish up that presentation, or answer last-minute emails. Why wait? Go to att.com/in-car Wi-Fi today for free trial eligibility. Based on independent third-party data, number of devices varies by manufacturer. Always pay careful attention to the road and don't drive distracted. Wi-Fi hotspot intended for passenger use only when vehicle is in operation. Compatible device and vehicle required.
It's brand new season two. I'm Marissa Thalberg.
And I'm Stephen Wolf Bedeta. And we're excited to be back having bigger, bolder, and always real conversations.
Straight from the C-suite front lines of marketing, media, and more.
We have great friends joining from people you may know, like Wilmer Valderrama and Bobby Burke.
And people you'll want to know. So grab a coffee or, hey, even an Aperol Spritz and come join us on America's number one podcast network, iHeart.
Listen to Brand New on the iHeart Radio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
The Therapy for Black Girls podcast is your space to explore mental health, personal development, and all of the small decisions we can make to become the best possible versions of ourselves. I'm your host, Dr. Joy Harden Bradford, a licensed psychologist in Atlanta, Georgia, and I can't wait for you to join the conversation every Wednesday. Listen to the Therapy for Black Girls podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts. Take good care, and we'll see you there.
I'm Johnny B. Goode, the host of the podcast Creating a Con, the Story of BitCon. This podcast dives deep into the story of Ray Trapani and his company, CentraTech. I'll explore how 320-somethings built a company out of lies, deceit, and greed.
I've been saying since a very young age that I was going to be a millionaire. If someone's like, oh, what's your best way of making money? I'm like, oh, we should start some sort of scheme.
Listen to Creating a Con, the Story of BitCon on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome to Tech Stuff, a production of iHeartRadio's How Stuff Works. Hey there, and welcome to Tech Stuff. I'm your host, Jonathan Strickland. I'm an executive producer with How Stuff Works and iHeartRadio, and I love all things tech. And it's time for another classic episode of Tech Stuff. This episode originally aired on August 8th, 2012. It is titled, Tech Stuff Hacks the Kinect. And this is all about the Microsoft Kinect, the peripheral for the Xbox platform. And back in 2012, that was still a thing. It's largely not a thing. I'll talk more about that at the end of this episode. But in the meantime, let's rejoin young Jonathan Strickland and his plucky co-host, Chris Paulette, as they talk about the Kinect.
Jonathan and I had been talking about things that you can do with other things.
Yeah.
Okay, that was a little oversimplified. Basically, existing technologies that could be repurposed for other means. We thought it would be fun to talk about a series of different kinds of technologies, too. Not just, say, game controllers like the Kinect. This is one of those that we're doing, and we thought this one in particular made an interesting topic because so many people have repurposed Microsoft's motion-sensitive controller. And it's actually for very simple reasons. It's really inexpensive compared to other ways to do this.
In fact, this
is very, very readily available.
This is something that we've talked about this in a previous episode, really, because back when we were talking about virtual reality.
Yeah.
Virtual reality, for a while, that was like the darling phrase in technology in the late 90s. Do you remember that era where you could shoot the pterodactyl and get incredibly dizzy due to latency issues? And
The funny thing about virtual reality is it still exists, but the phrase has become so dated and associated with that big headgear and the giant gloves that you had to be wired into, or the holodeck on
there's
Star
Trek.
There's
a stigma there.
Yeah, there's a stigma there. And the ideas have become much more refined, but they're sort of augmented reality or just reality.
Virtual environments sometimes.
Virtual environments. But yeah, the Kinect is one of those things that sort of bridge the gap between the real world and what you see on the computer or on the TV.
Right. And like you said, it's readily available and it's inexpensive. That was the big problem that virtual environment scientists and pioneers were running into, is the fact that they could build the software, but designing the hardware was a lot more difficult, because you're talking about an incredibly expensive process to prototype something and then build out a working version of it, and then go into mass production if you ever want to go beyond just a laboratory experiment.
Yeah.
That's hard to do. And so virtual environment folks often end up looking to the world of video games to repurpose the equipment that is made as just a form of entertainment so that they can use it in their own projects. So we've seen this with things like the Wii controller, the Sony Move controller, as well as the Kinect. It's one of those very easy to get your hands on pieces of technology.
Yep, yep. Yeah, those early devices required you to put on glasses or wear a helmet that had a display that you could see so that you knew what you were doing in this virtual world. You had to have some kind of something on your body, often gloves or some kind of sensors that would relay information to the computer generating this virtual world.
Yeah, usually it'd be a combination of something you were holding or wearing, plus the head-mounted display would have some tracking in it as well for head tracking.
And in some cases, you'd have to be on some kind of virtual environment, too. You'd have to be on a treadmill or something that would track your movements or would make it seem like you were walking in this virtual environment. And as you can imagine, this is all really expensive. The newer systems that we use now use infrared or cameras, regular cameras, to capture where you are. They map out the room. They know what's going on in your actual physical environment, where you are. And you don't have to necessarily be wired in like you used to be. A lot of it's also using Bluetooth or Wi-Fi to communicate. Makes life so much more easy.
Right. And plus, we're talking about consoles that are much more powerful than the computers were back in the old, even in the days when people were building virtual environments and they're building those first applications. The consoles that we have today are in many ways comparable or sometimes superior to the equipment that they were using back then.
Mm-hmm.
So let's talk a little bit about the Kinect, what makes it work, and how it is able to detect depth, that's the key to many of the Kinect hacks, is the fact that the Kinect is able to map out a 3D virtual environment based upon a physical space.
Mm-hmm. Thankfully, I found a really cool diagram in an article by Jason Tanz called Kinect Hackers Are Changing the Future of Robotics. The Kinect is a wired device, but attached to that wire are some actually pretty simple electronics. It's got an array of microphones.
Right. It's got a video camera.
A video camera. A color camera, as a matter of fact.
Mm-hmm.
It's got an infrared emitter.
Yes, which I will explain what that does in a minute. And a sensor as well to pick up what that emitter is, the reflections of that, of the stuff that the emitter is spreading out.
Yep. It's also got a depth camera, which essentially creates a map of the room.
Mm-hmm.
And it's got a series of, it's got a tilt motor in it.
Yeah, to allow the device itself to change its own perspective, really.
Yes.
Which is very useful in lots of different applications.
Also, so you can go connect and it goes, sort of like a dog. It's sort of, okay, no, it doesn't.
How can the Kinect detect a three-dimensional environment? So,
right.
With a 3D camera, the way we would normally make a 3D movie is that you would have a camera that would have two sets of lenses set apart from one another in such a way so that two different sets of images could be combined so when we watch it, our brains do the work and put it all together and it makes the illusion of 3D.
Right. The two cameras are spaced about the average width of a human eye.
Right.
So that it creates that illusion of depth, because it takes two images set apart and about that width, and it makes us believe, it makes our brains think that it's in 3D.
Right, right. And each set of images goes to one of our eyes.
Right.
So that's why people who have vision problems with one eye or would often have difficulty perceiving a 3D film, because for it to really work, both eyes have to receive their individual sets of information. That's why 3D glasses are the way they are. It's to filter out the other set of images so that only one set goes to each eye.
Yeah.
Well, that's not how the Kinect does this.
No.
The Kinect has that emitter and the sensor, or the depth camera, to do this. And what's going on is that, imagine that you've got your living room set up, okay? And you've got your Kinect connected to your Xbox 360.
So imagined.
All right. So you're standing in front of the Kinect. How does the Kinect tell that you are a three-dimensional person? Because remember, when a regular video camera, you're getting a flattened image.
Yeah.
That's the real problem with a basic camera, is that it flattens everything out. It does not detect depth.
You right. know, mm-hmm.
The only cue we have visually is essentially the perspective.
Yeah.
Which is why in the Lord of the Rings movies, when you had characters standing really far away from characters who were really close to the camera, that created the forced perspective illusion that one character was larger significantly than another character.
Mm-hmm.
Happens all the time in films. Well, the way the Kinect gets around this is that emitter, that infrared emitter, sends out essentially a grid
mm-hmm.
that is made up of infrared light. Now, we cannot see infrared light, so we do not perceive this, right?
Right.
It's outside the visible spectrum for human beings, unless you're an elf or a dwarf from Advanced Dungeons & Dragons, in which case you might be able to see this. But you're probably not playing Xbox if you're one of those, unless it's Skyrim. Anyway, so this grid gets projected over the physical environment.
Right.
Well, when the grid encounters a physical object, it's deformed. The grid itself is deformed, not the object. The object stays the same. Otherwise, we would have a lot more to talk about with the Kinect. So the grid deforms when it comes into contact with a physical object. The depth camera measures the deformities that are within this grid and can interpret that as objects that are a certain distance from the Kinect.
Yep.
So as it tracks the changes in these deformities, it detects player movement. So when you move your arm, that grid is going to change, and the depth sensor is going to capture those changes, send that information to a processor, which then interprets those changes as various commands. So, for example, if it's a game where you shove your hand out in order to make a character shoot a gun,
mm-hmm.
then what happens is the grid will be deformed as your hand goes closer to the camera to the infrared emitter, really, from the Kinect. That grid deforms in a certain way. The depth sensor camera detects it and then sends the appropriate command or the data to the processor, which processes the appropriate command for the game. So that's the basics behind the depth sensing technology of the Kinect. There are a lot of other sensors out there that use similar technology. Not all of them are using that grid approach, because one of the downsides to this is that the closer you get to the camera, the less accurate this depth sensing technology is, because the grid is the squares within that grid are a certain size.
Mm-hmm.
So as you get closer and closer, you are deforming less of the grid with your various movements, because your movements are taking place more within the empty space of the box as opposed to the various intersecting lines.
Right.
If that makes any sense.
No, it does. It's funny, because this technology is, we think about it, this technology is designed to be used in the living room.
Yeah.
As part of a game system. It's designed to be inexpensive so people can afford it, but still to be sophisticated. And that's why, and it was designed by Microsoft, which is why people want to hack it.
Yeah.
Actually, I think that's probably a lesser reason, but a motivating factor for some people.
I think the motivating factor is mainly that it's a cool technology that can do a lot of stuff, but the fact that Microsoft is the one behind it may give some people a little extra motivation.
That's slightly turned up smile that I've got right now. It's available in many, many places.
Right.
That's sort of what provided the impetus for sort of a competition to see who could hack into it first and make sense of the communications.
Right. So the Kinect launched officially on November 4th, 2010.
Right.
And then immediately
Not
there
even
was
2 years ago now.
Yeah.
As of when we're recording this.
Right. And immediately there was this challenge issued. It was like a bounty, essentially, for the first people to really hack the Kinect. Microsoft, the initial reaction from the company was negative. The company officials originally, when news was breaking about people trying to hack the Kinect, said that they were not in favor of people modifying their products. And in fact, they would work with law enforcement officials to try and keep people from tampering with the Kinect.
Yes, but at that point, if you think about it, the Xbox 360 had been out before Nintendo's Wii system, and a lot of people had dismissed the Wii as being a lightweight, didn't have high def, not full 1080 high def,
right? And it was seen as a game system for casual gamers, which. Yeah. Amongst a certain subset of hardcore gamers, that has a stigma,
mm-hmm.
right? For a hardcore gamer, for some, not all, because I'm a hardcore gamer in many ways, but I don't share this particular opinion. But for some hardcore gamers, they view it as it's not a quote-unquote real gaming system because it doesn't cater to their particular gaming preferences.
Right, right. And, we've talked about this on multiple podcasts, so I don't want to get into it in great depth. I think that the success of the Wii's control system, using the wireless motion control system, surprised both Sony and Microsoft. And then Microsoft was the first to come out with its own upgrade to the 360, which, wasn't actually the 360. It was actually the Kinect itself. And we heard about this as Project Natal back in the early days of the system. But then they released the Kinect, and it was immensely successful from the get-go far as the Xbox 360, because it gave you all kinds of new ways to interact with the system and the games. It sold like hotcakes. It became the fastest ever selling device.
I believe so, yeah. I think it broke all the records at the time of its release. Now, I should add that before we get a ton of listener mail and responses to this, there have been some criticisms about the Microsoft support of the Kinect, saying that perhaps there aren't quite as many games to support the device as people would prefer.
Sure.
But it's still been an incredible resource for hackers.
Yes.
So maybe not as much for hardcore video gamers, although there are some great Kinect games out there.
Mm-hmm.
It's just that some people say, like, okay, well, the added benefit of the Kinect hasn't really been fully realized in the game space.
Right.
But it is. It's an incredible tool for hackers.
Yeah. Microsoft came out with a really nifty device in the Kinect. And the only reason I mentioned that bit of background was I think it may have played into Microsoft's response to the hacker community doing this. As Jonathan mentioned a moment ago, they said, no, this is a proprietary device. We do not want anybody mucking around with it and hacking it. It is designed for the Xbox 360. And then a very short time later, yeah. Like basically they had the weekend to think about it.
So it launched on November 4th.
Uh-huh.
They shortly after launch discussed the idea of, we do not want people hacking with this.
Yes.
But on November 19th,
a short period of time.
Right. There was a developer for the Kinect who specifically said that they left the Kinect open by design.
Mm-hmm.
It was meant to be a hackable device, and Microsoft got behind that at that point. I think in part they saw what the public opinion was, and they probably also learned from other companies, maybe not mistakes, but their approaches to this same sort of thing.
Yeah,
like here, a famous one, Sony's PS3.
Yes,
the original run of the PS3 allowed you to load up a Linux-based operating system to the PS3, turning it into a very powerful computer.
Yeah.
And if you got a whole bunch of them together, you could make essentially what was equivalent to a supercomputer running on this alternate operating system. But then in later iterations of the PS3, later models, Sony removed that. They began to send out patches to the firmware so that it would prevent you from loading in that operating system on the older models.
Right.
And then the newer models just had no support for it at all. And Sony caught a lot of flack from a lot of different hackers and computer scientists saying, you've just taken away a tool that was incredibly powerful and affordable that would have done a lot of good, and now we can't do that anymore, including the military. The military was using PS3s as well in this case.
Yeah, because they were inexpensive compared to the other kinds of supercomputer, quote unquote, supercomputer material or hardware they were looking into.
Yeah.
And it was easy to do.
And
that's why the hacker community, with Microsoft's now blessing, they've said, you know, okay, let's do this.
Yeah,
and
I think,
boy, have they.
I think Microsoft realized, they said, you know, this, first of all, it's a losing battle because hackers are going to hack. Second of all, it's a better PR move if we support it than if we don't. And third, they may have just honestly rethought it and came to the conclusion of, this makes way more sense. First of all, we're going to sell way more Kinects if we actually support this community.
And
you never know what can come out of it. And some phenomenal stuff has come out of the hacking community. And some of it came out almost immediately, like within a couple of weeks of the Kinect becoming a product that you could actually buy off the store shelf and bring it home. You started seeing some really innovative hacks using it.
Yeah. Now, also, just as a mitigating factor, 3A or 3.5 on your scale, Microsoft also realized that the proprietary information inside the Kinect is remaining proprietary. The things that the hackers are doing basically just use the signals from the Kinect.
Yeah.
They found ways to write software for and use the signals from the Kinect, and they're not actually getting into the stuff that's truly proprietary about the Kinect. And so Microsoft went, well, there's nothing to be afraid of.
Yeah.
Which is very cool.
It's not like hackers are trying to create a cheaper version of the Kinect and sell that.
Or reverse engineer it. Yeah.
Yeah.
They're not doing that. But let's talk about the stuff that they are doing with it.
There's so many amazing things.
All kinds of things.
So they fall into general broad categories usually. There are quite a few that fit into various broad categorizations, like user interfaces would be one, using the Kinect in various ways as a user interface, which is not a big surprise. I mean, that's the original intended use of the Kinect. It's a user interface for the Xbox 360. But there are people who have designed it to be a user interface for lots of other stuff. Everything from a computer where you're just using gesture controls and voice controls to interact with a computer, to robotics. I showed a video to Chris and our producer Tyler just before we went live on this podcast, talking about a project that created a robotic trash can. And it was a very clever approach. And it wasn't, it was using a Kinect in a way I just did not, it didn't occur to me.
It mirrors what happened with the Microsoft Kinect, in that people saw a challenge and they rose to meet the challenge. It was based off a commercial for what, gum?
Mints.
Or mints.
Yes.
Okay.
It was a mint commercial that the idea being that it shows a guy at a typewriter and a typewriter. Kids, ask your parents. It shows a guy at a typewriter and pulling out a sheet of paper from the typewriter and crumpling it up and throwing it behind his back. And does this a couple of times.
He's working on a project and he's just coming up with drafts that don't match with his expectations. So each one he pulls out and throws away.
And then he takes
it. He's very inaccurate.
Right, right. So it cuts behind him and there's just all these little crumpled pieces of paper on the floor.
Yeah.
Then he eats a couple of mints, crumples up the next piece of paper, throws it behind him, and then the trash can moves to intercept where the paper is coming from and catches the paper, right?
Yeah, it says the mints will make you sharper. Actually, it seems like they should. He's apparently been feeding the mints to
the
trash
can. But yeah,
anyway.
So some
cute commercial.
Some some robotics and computer scientist types decided to try and recreate that moving trash can. So they built a robotic base that had three wheels on it that would allow the base to move in any given direction at a pretty good clip, as the video shows.
Yeah.
Then they built essentially a trash can chassis that fits over that, so it disguises the fact that there's this base with wheels on it. Just from a casual glance, it looks like a trash can that goes all the way to the floor.
Yeah,
but there's actually just a little bit of clearance so that the wheels can move around.
Yes, yes. They obviously were very careful in their measurements.
Yeah.
Because it fits directly over the robot base. And you cannot tell just from a casual glance that there's a robot inside the trash can.
Yeah.
And I'm assuming they probably made a false bottom, too, to cover the robot.
Yeah,
they didn't show that part. But
yeah, they did show that they were actually machining these parts.
Yes.
Like they were using
it's
routers.
Custom built.
Yeah. So the remote control aspect they hooked up to a computer, and they wrote some software, and they used a Kinect sensor. They mounted it to the wall. So what the Kinect sensor does is it essentially makes a 3D map of the room,
mm-hmm.
right?
Right.
So it's able to detect depth and direction and movement. And what they did was they created a program so that when you tossed any small object through this space, the Kinect would detect the arc of that particular object and plot out where it was going to land, send a command to this robotic trash can, which would intercept that path and catch the object. So this has to happen really fast.
Yeah.
It has to detect the arc, plot it out its course, send the information to the robot, and the robot has to have time to move to the right location to catch it. And we were watching the video. It's probably, on average, the trash can's probably moving 3 or 4 feet, right? Maybe 3 feet. Let's say three.
About a meter.
Yeah. So it's, but it's still pretty impressive to watch them toss various objects into the air and the trash can moves to intercept and catch it. And you think, well, that's kind of a ridiculous use of the Kinect. I mean, but it shows that the 3D mapping technology, within this device can be used for some really, really creative, projects. And I've already shared the video of this trash can on our Facebook page, but I'll be sure to tweet it out too, so you guys can, you may have already seen it, but I just was so amused at that particular use of the Kinect.
We have a bit more to say about the Microsoft Kinect and how it works, but first let's go and take a quick break to thank our sponsor.
Working remotely, where you are shouldn't dictate what you do. Work from the road by turning your vehicle into a reliable high-speed data Wi-Fi hotspot with AT&T in-car Wi-Fi. On the network that covers more roads than any other carrier, take your work on the road and AT&T will be there to keep you connected. Connect up to 10 devices and stream conference calls, finish up that presentation, or answer last-minute emails. Why wait? Go to att.com/in-car Wi-Fi today for free trial eligibility. Based on independent third-party data, number of devices varies by manufacturer. Always pay careful attention to the road and don't drive distracted. Wi-Fi hotspot intended for passenger use only when vehicle is in operation. Compatible device and vehicle required.
If you love sports and true crime, then there's a new podcast from executive producer Dan Patrick and hosted by me, Jay Harris, that you won't want to miss. Playing Dirty Sports Scandals. Each week, I'm squeezing the juiciest details from some of the biggest sports scandals ever. I'm talking Marcus Dixon, Olympic gymnastics, Cain Velasquez, salacious Super Bowl-level scandals. Join me on the dark side of sports by listening to Playing Dirty Sports Scandals on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
What's up, everybody? This is Stephen A. Smith. When I'm not at my day job, First Take, you can find me in my studio hosting the Stephen A. Smith Show podcast. Tune in every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday, at the very least, as I bring you all new episodes that feature the biggest headlines in the world of sports, pop culture, business, and politics. You'll hear my unfiltered opinions on those nauseating Cowboy fans, the chaos in Washington, D.C., and trending topics on social media, as well as my straight shooter interviews with top celebrities and game changers. And I occasionally give out love advice. Yes, it's true. If you want to know my true feelings about something, I'll give it to you straight. So, listen to the Stephen A. Smith Show podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcast.
I'm Hannah Storm, and my podcast, NBA DNA with Hannah Storm, digs deep into the history of professional basketball, along with my own as one of the first female sportscasters.
Now let's get you up to speed on what else happened around the NBA today.
We talked to all sorts of people I interacted with, from Dr. J to Charles Barkley, and recap iconic moments.
Yes, he's got it. Here he comes. Ray rock the baby to sleep and slam dunk.
As well as some of the wild stories behind the scenes.
We were like, what? What are we in for? The scoreboard crashes before we even tip a game off.
Today, the NBA is a global sports and entertainment giant. Players are multimillionaires and cultural icons.
Iguodala to Curry, back to Iguodala, up for the layup. Oh, blocked by James. LeBron James.
And these stories are about how we got here, both on and off the court. And what's next? Listen to NBA DNA with Hannah Storm on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
These robotics engineers have built this robotics trash can, a robotic trash can. For fun, to meet a challenge that they perceived, it wasn't even a real challenge, it was a perceived challenge of doing this because they saw it on the commercial and thought it was cool.
Yeah, at least that's what we can guess. We don't read the, it's produced out of Asia and neither of us read the language that they wrote everything down in, but that's what we're, that's our interpretation.
Yeah, yeah. So, and okay, so they've, it's proof of concept, if you will.
Uh-huh.
It can be done.
Yeah.
But what if you had a real challenge? You had somebody who needed help. For example, they were suffering from dementia or some kind of physical impairment that kept them from interacting with their world in a way that, you know, the typical person would.
Mm-hmm.
So let's say they have this a chair based on this technology, and somebody who might have trouble sitting down. And the chair moves slightly to the left to make sure that they're going to sit squarely in the chair instead of missing it and hitting the floor and needing assistance getting up.
Sure.
You could use the technology developed by Microsoft, the Kinect, to and this the software and the technology developed by these guys apparently just playing around and use it for something practical in the real world.
Yep.
So, I honestly, I'm just messing around in the top of my head as you were describing that. I was thinking, yeah, it could be silly, but it could be used for something really useful.
Yeah, yeah.
And that's just something I, you know.
Well, and there are plenty of other examples of this being a user interface. For example, the one that I talked about earlier, where you're navigating a computer system using gestures, kind of like the old Minority Report.
Oh yeah.
Approach, except instead of it being projected in front of you, it's, you know, it's on a screen, but you're moving your hands to gesture control whatever it is you're looking at.
Yeah.
That's a, you know, and of course that's something that Microsoft itself has talked about, the possibility that, you know, we would see a Kinect-like sensor being built into computers in the future, and versions of Windows would support that. And if you look at something like Windows 8, it's not hard to imagine that, just based on the Metro layout that they have.
And it does already work on computers. You can mm-hmm. use a Kinect for computer gaming as well as for the Xbox 360. So it's, you know, oh, hey, we're getting close to that word that you haven't used in quite some time.
Yeah, there's another cool use of Kinect I saw was the gestural spatial mixer. Did you see this?
The gestural spatial mixer.
Yeah, it's a student. Unfortunately, I wasn't able to get the information about his name because the blog I was looking at didn't list it. But it was this graduate student who had designed a program where you could play multiple tracks for let's say you've created a music track and it's got various channels in it. Okay.
Yeah.
And you've got a multi-speaker setup. So he was using, I think, an array of speakers where there's something like six of them. He had it, a Kinect hack where he had designed the software and he was using the Kinect to manipulate the music so that you could isolate channels. So if you just wanted to listen to one channel within that entire music track, you could.
Yeah.
You could even move that channel from one speaker to another.
Mm-hmm.
So let's say that, you know, I just want this to come from the left side. I'm going to move it to the two speakers furthest to the left, and it's going to not even be on the four speakers on the right. You could do that. And you could change the volume, and you could make it sound like it was the music was coming from nearby or far away. It would add in extra effects for that kind of stuff. So he was doing all of this in real time, just manipulating the music physically. So it's almost like being the conductor of an orchestra, except, of course, you know that certain things would always play out the same way. He wasn't affecting the speed of the playback or anything like that, but volume and some other effects, as well as where the music appeared. He had that all in his demo.
Yeah. Also, and the flutes are more likely to be in tune. Sorry. You know, that wasn't very nice.
Whatever. You're a drummer. You cannot make jokes about other musicians.
I'm sorry, what? I was drooling on something. anyway, yes, I can. We all make jokes about one another.
Okay.
I mean, that's the idea of being able to do that is fascinating. I've seen quite a lot of those kinds of things, but they're typically done with infrared light, or you break a light beam to make that happen.
Yeah.
And the idea of using the Kinect for that purpose.
Yeah. And the light beam stuff tends to be a lot more limited.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you don't have the versatility that you would with a Kinect. We actually have an article about some Kinect hacks, as well as an article about how the Kinect itself works. So you should go to howstuffworks.com if you want more information. The article on how the Kinect works is helpful, and the hacks are kind of fun too. One of the ones mentioned talks about this isn't actually in our article. This is one of the other ones I discovered, was a Kinect hack that was hooked up to Tesla coils. Actually, I think this one is in our article.
Oh, okay.
And the Tesla coils, if you don't know, these are things that create high voltage electrical currents. You could change the frequency of those currents. And it's this sparking thing that you often see in old science fiction movies that is a standard part of a mad scientist lair. It's not the Jacob's ladder.
No.
But it's,
I know, but that I don't have a sound effect for a Tesla
coil. I was going to say, zzzup, that's more of a Jacob's ladder sound.
Yes, it is.
But no, the Tesla coils, it's this, this massive thing. It can be a massive thing that shoots out deadly sparks. You don't want to get hit by them.
No.
We've seen groups like Arc Attack that use Tesla coils to create music. Well, at Maker Faire 2011 in the UK, a guy named Tom Wyatt headed up a team where they showed off a Kinect that they hooked up to Tesla coils, and they used the motions that they would the Kinect would pick up motions that Wyatt and his team would make and translate that into different voltage frequencies for the Tesla coil. So you can make the Tesla coil emit electricity at different frequencies, which actually has a different sound to it. That's how Arc Attack makes music with these things. They program in specific frequencies so that they can create tones.
Mm-hmm.
So one of my favorites is they use it to create a cover of the Doctor Who theme.
Ha!
Which is pretty awesome. Now, I've also seen a really good one where they used a special suit they could wear, which allows the person to actually be hit by the electrical currents without frying. And they did the Imperial March from Star Wars. So it looks like he's shooting electricity from his hands as the
nice
theme is playing. Yeah, really subtle. Anyway, that was a really cool one. The article also talked about one from the University of Washington that used the Kinect when in the use of robotic surgeries. Now, these are surgeries that are not done on robots, but by robots.
Right.
So sometimes
that's far more common than it used to be.
Yeah. This is when this is telesurgery, right? Where the actual surgeon is in one location and is controlling robotic implements to perform a physical surgery that could be half a world away. Well, the use of the Kinect is meant to do things like create a virtual map of where a person's organs are. The idea being that when you're using a robotic tool to cut a person or whatever the surgical procedure is,
make an incision.
That would be one of them, but should you start to approach the area of an organ, it would send the signal, because the Kinect has mapped this out and it detects that you're getting close to one of those areas, send a signal that would give you some sort of haptic feedback. So you would actually feel a warning saying, hey, you don't want to, you know, you got to be careful because now you're approaching a vital area. Because again, when you don't have, when you're distanced like that, it's a lot harder to tell, you know, how close you are to something like that. So yeah. That's a pretty interesting use of a Kinect. You know, something that was used for video games could potentially be used to save lives.
Yes. Yes, definitely so. You realize that this is actually pretty easy to do when you get right down to it. I was looking at articles about how to hack with a Kinect. And basically, all it requires is a computer and a Kinect.
Yeah.
You might need a power supply for the Kinect if you're hooking it up to a computer, if you don't have one, because they don't necessarily come with them if you're buying the one that comes with the Xbox 360. Mm-hmm. But, you know, there's a wealth of information online, and you can look it up in a search engine for Kinect hacks, and you can find the software that you need. And it depends on what you're doing with it.
Yeah.
But there's already some pre-written software available out there by other hackers who have done maybe something very close to what you're planning that you might be able to get. So it there's really not a great big boundary to getting involved with it. There are plenty of things like robotics and things like this, but one of the really cool applications of hacking Kinect technology I've seen is someone who's using they're scientists using the Kinect to do geographical measurements on bodies in space and on glaciers. I found an article by Adam Mann about Ken Mankoff, who basically was doing scans of caves using the Kinect. This is one of those times when the Kinect's limitations come into play, because if the sensor were, or sensors in the Kinect were more or were designed to scan larger bodies instead of your living room or larger environments, let's say that, then he wouldn't have to do quite so many measurements with the Kinect. Mm-hmm. But he has found that it is far cheaper to buy a Kinect for the computer than it would be to rent the sophisticated equipment. A lot of times they use light detection and ranging, which is LIDAR. Mm-hmm. And they can use, they can use these over, much longer distances, including miles, you know. But the problem is, it costs $10,000 to $200,000 for LIDAR, as opposed to $120 for a Kinect.
Now, if you guys have seen the documentary Prometheus, you know about the use of LIDAR to map out things like underground caverns, where they had these probes go in and use LIDAR to create a full virtual map of that environment.
Mm-hmm.
That, of course, is a movie, not a documentary. I make that joke all the time, but just in case you weren't familiar.
If you're new.
But yeah, I've seen other uses of this tech for the same sort of purpose, using them for rescue robots, essentially. You would send – let's say that you have an environment that is dangerous, mm-hmm. and there may or may not be people in that environment, or perhaps some other thing that's in that environment that we should really try and get close to, but we don't know – the nature of that environment. How dangerous would it be? Sending in a robot that's got a Kinect that can do this 3D mapping could be very useful, because it gives you an idea of what the conditions are within that environment and whether or not it is wise to send in a human to try and navigate it.
Mm-hmm.
That particular use is everything from geology to rescue operations.
Younger Jonathan has apparently made the gesture control to put the episode on pause so that we can take a quick break to thank our sponsor. We'll be right back.
Working remotely, where you are shouldn't dictate what you do. Work from the road by turning your vehicle into a reliable high-speed data Wi-Fi hotspot with AT&T in-car Wi-Fi. On the network that covers more roads than any other carrier, take your work on the road and AT&T will be there to keep you connected. Connect up to 10 devices and stream conference calls, finish up that presentation, or answer last-minute emails. Why wait? Go to att.com/in-car Wi-Fi today for free trial eligibility. Based on independent third-party data, number of devices varies by manufacturer. Always pay careful attention to the road and don't drive distracted. Wi-Fi hotspot intended for passenger use only when vehicle is in operation. Compatible device and vehicle required.
If you love sports and true crime, then there's a new podcast from executive producer Dan Patrick and hosted by me, Jay Harris, that you won't want to miss. Playing Dirty Sports Scandals. Each week, I'm squeezing the juiciest details from some of the biggest sports scandals ever. I'm talking Marcus Dixon, Olympic gymnastics, Cain Velasquez, salacious Super Bowl-level scandals. Join me on the dark side of sports by listening to Playing Dirty Sports Scandals on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
What's up, everybody? This is Stephen A. Smith. When I'm not at my day job, First Take, you can find me in my studio hosting the Stephen A. Smith Show podcast. Tune in every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday, at the very least, as I bring you all new episodes that feature the biggest headlines in the world of sports, pop culture, business, and politics. You'll hear my unfiltered opinions on those nauseating Cowboy fans, the chaos in Washington, D.C., and trending topics on social media, as well as my straight shooter interviews with top celebrities and game changers. And I occasionally give out love advice. Yes, it's true. If you want to know my true feelings about something, I'll give it to you straight. So listen to the Stephen A. Smith Show podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcast.
I'm Hannah Storm, and my podcast, NBA DNA with Hannah Storm, digs deep into the history of professional basketball, along with my own as one of the first female sportscasters.
Now let's get you up to speed on what else happened around the NBA today.
We talked to all sorts of people I interacted with, from Dr. J to Charles Barkley, and recap iconic moments.
Yes, he's got it. Here he comes. Ray rocked the baby to sleep and slam dunk.
As well as some of the wild stories behind the scenes.
We were like, what? What are we in for? The scoreboard crashes before we even tip a game off.
Today, the NBA is a global sports and entertainment giant. Players are multimillionaires and cultural icons.
Iguodala to Curry, back to Iguodala, up for the layup. Oh, blocked by James! LeBron James!
And these stories are about how we got here, both on and off the court. And what's next? Listen to NBA DNA with Hannah Storr on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Working remotely, where you are shouldn't dictate what you do. Work from the road by turning your vehicle into a reliable high-speed data Wi-Fi hotspot with AT&T in-car Wi-Fi. On the network that covers more roads than any other carrier, take your work on the road and AT&T will be there to keep you connected. Connect up to 10 devices and stream conference calls, finish up that presentation, or answer last-minute emails. Why wait? Go to att.com/in-car Wi-Fi today for free trial eligibility. Based on independent third-party data, number of devices varies by manufacturer. Always pay careful attention to the road and don't drive distracted. Wi-Fi hotspot intended for passenger use only when vehicle is in operation. Compatible device and vehicle required.
If you love sports and true crime, then there's a new podcast from executive producer Dan Patrick and hosted by me, Jay Harris, that you won't want to miss. Playing Dirty Sports Scandals. Each week, I'm squeezing the juiciest details from some of the biggest sports scandals ever. I'm talking Marcus Dixon, Olympic gymnastics, Cain Velasquez, salacious Super Bowl-level scandals. Join me on the dark side of sports by listening to Playing Dirty Sports Scandals on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
What's up, everybody? This is Stephen A. Smith. When I'm not at my day job, First Take, you can find me in my studio hosting the Stephen A. Smith Show podcast. Tune in every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday, at the very least, as I bring you all new episodes that feature the biggest headlines in the world of sports, pop culture, business, and politics. You'll hear my unfiltered opinions on those nauseating Cowboy fans, the chaos in Washington, D.C., and trending topics on social media, as well as my straight shooter interviews with top celebrities and game changers. And I occasionally give out love advice. Yes, it's true. If you want to know my true feelings about something, I'll give it to you straight. So listen to the Stephen A. Smith Show podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcast.
I'm Hannah Storm, and my podcast, NBA DNA with Hannah Storm, digs deep into the history of professional basketball, along with my own as one of the first female sportscasters.
Now let's get you up to speed on what else happened around the NBA today.
We talked to all sorts of people I interacted with, from Dr. J to Charles Barkley, and recap iconic moments.
Yes, he's got it. Here he comes. Ray rocked the baby to sleep and slam dunk.
As well as some of the wild stories behind the scenes.
We were like, what? What are we in for? The scoreboard crashes before we even tip a game off.
Today, the NBA is a global sports and entertainment giant. Players are multimillionaires and cultural icons.
Iguodala to Curry, back to Iguodala, up for the layup. Oh, blocked by James. LeBron James.
And these stories are about how we got here, both on and off the court. And what's next? Listen to NBA DNA with Hannah Storm on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
The article also that I read also talked to a scientist named Naor Movshovitz, who wants to put devices, maybe not necessarily the Kinect, but devices like the Kinect on space exploration robots and have them fly in close to asteroids to do a map of the surface.
Sure.
The applications for this device have really spawned quite a lot of speculation and interest among the hacker community and among serious thinkers.
Not that the two worlds don't converge.
Well, no, they not necessarily, but I mean, people who are doing this just for fun and people who are doing this for very serious reasons,
or both.
And I'm sure they inspire one another. And I'm sure that based on what the limitations of the Kinect and what it can't do, it wasn't intended to do these things, but wow. You really just didn't anticipate this coming, and it's great that it has.
I have a couple of others I want to just mention.
Please.
So one of them is Second Story Labs.
Mm-hmm.
They have started to use the Kinect. You know, Kinect has evolved as well. Like, the firmware has evolved over time. Microsoft built in some facial tracking capabilities that were updated to the Kinect. So the original Kinect wasn't as good at it, but now it's gotten much better where it can track a person's face. In fact, that's caused some people a little bit of concern. But Second Story Labs, what they did was they took this capability and they used it for an interface where they can create the illusion of a holographic display.
Illusion.
Yeah. So you've got, imagine that you've got a glass window in front of you.
Mm-hmm.
And to you, it looks like a three-dimensional image is floating behind that glass.
Right.
And as you move your head, you can see the different parts of the image. Well, what's actually happening with Second Story Labs' approach is they're using the Kinect to track your facial movements.
Yeah.
So that as you move, it can display a different it can alter the appearance of whatever the display is showing so that it would show you the angle, like what would happen if you were actually looking at an object from that angle.
Mm-hmm.
So in other words, it's not a true hologram. It's still a two-dimensional image, but it's adjusting on the fly as you move around so that it looks like a three-dimensional image. So to your brain, it might as well be three-dimensional, which I think is a really creative way of getting around this whole glasses-free 3D thing.
Yep. And it could also, and I imagine it will, you know, we were talking about Minority Report earlier,
mm-hmm.
and in the movie, they're walking around in interactive environments where people are talking specifically to you about things that they know about you. maybe not necessarily that. Again, you were talking about the facial recognition. They could do that.
Yeah.
But you might start seeing shopping environments that start talking to you. There are some displays that you walk by now and there are motion sensors in the display, but it's right there at the display. You can make an entire environment that knows where a person is, and they say, oh, I see you're looking at the computers. Well, yeah. We have these. They've got these processors. Or you might have an automated salesperson talking to you about the benefits of one model over another because they know you're standing right in front of those.
Or you might just use them to help design better storefronts. Like,
yes.
imagine having a window on a street, you know, sidewalk. You're walking down the sidewalk. You're looking into a display window. You could just as easily use a Kinect if it had sophisticated enough tracking capabilities where it can actually track where you are looking.
Yeah.
And you could say, all right, well, we tested out this one display using this particular layout.
Yeah.
And this is where people were looking. And that's not what we wanted them to look at. We really wanted to feature this other thing. So then we did the display a different way like this, and everyone was looking where we wanted them to. So that's the way we need to do it in order to promote whatever it is we're selling.
Mm-hmm.
That's just one simple way that could be used. A Kinect could be used in the future. Another cool hack that I thought was actually really, really interesting.
Yeah.
I mean, it has some really the experiment is interesting. The potential applications are pretty phenomenal. Alex Brown and Brian Brown, they worked together to create a virtual realm that would allow you to interact with virtual objects that could in turn control actual physical objects in your real environment around you.
Huh.
So what they did was they used a programmable automation controller. And they had this programmable automation controller panel that had switches on it. And when you turned on one switch, an LED would come on.
Mm-hmm.
And when you hit the switch next to it, the LED would go off. So there was a physical switch that would turn that LED on or off.
Okay.
Okay. So then they built a virtual representation of this console in a virtual environment. And by virtually touching the switch, it would cause the physical LED on the real console to come on.
Right.
And then by touching the other switch, it would make the light go back off. So it's just like you're touching the physical controls, but you're doing it in the virtual realm.
Weird.
Now, imagine, let's say that you've created a entertainment complex, okay?
Yeah.
That is a virtual reality entertainment complex. So you, Chris, go into this virtual reality entertainment complex and you are able to interact with this virtual environment. And as you interact in the virtual environment, physical things happen as a result of your virtual actions.
Okay.
So let's say it's a role-playing game and you are playing in a really you're in the Arctic and you're inside a room when you first start, but you decide to go outside. When you go okay. outside, by opening the door, it activates a fan system that blows very cold air on you so that you
yeah.
get the sensation. So it creates that tactile, immersive environment. That's just one example of a potential application of this sort of technology. A lot of other ones would have nothing to do with entertainment. They'd be much more practical
yeah.
than, you know, just giving us a bit of a thrill as we play a game. But I thought that was really neat. The idea of impacting your physical world through your virtual actions.
Yeah.
See, it's that marriage of the physical and virtual that I find so fascinating. And again, that's one of the reasons why I like augmented reality so much.
Yeah.
Is that idea that bringing those two worlds closer and closer together until we get to the point where you know, if you don't like how your day is going, you just hit control alt delete.
Yeah.
But the Kinect's also been used in lots of other applications, things like digital puppetry, where people have built a digital character that they could manipulate by doing motion controls. And some of them are very much like puppetry. Like you have the digital version of a sock puppet.
Yeah.
Someone holds up their hand and moves their hand, and then the sock puppet reacts in a very similar way.
It's got no strings.
Yeah, to hold it down. It's just virtual strings. Yeah, it's pretty interesting. And then I've even seen stuff where people have added in special effects on top of whatever their actions are in real time. So remember, the Kinect also has a color camera in it.
Mm-hmm.
So it's not just this depth sensor. It's also a way of either streaming or even recording video, depending on what you're doing and how, you know, what you have the Kinect hooked up to.
Yeah.
So let's say you're streaming video on a big screen and it's capturing whatever you're doing in front of the Kinect, and you're holding a like a plain dowel.
Okay.
Right?
Yeah.
But you've created this program that overlays an effect on top of that dowel. So now it looks like on the screen, you're wielding a lightsaber from Star Wars.
Right.
And as you move around, the video version of you is swinging a lightsaber. Even though the real version of you is swinging a dowel, on the screen, it's a lightsaber.
Right.
You know, that's something that was one of the first applications I saw, actually, one of the first hacks.
Yeah. Well, it's not completely unlike what they actually did in the movies.
Yeah, it's just all done in real time as opposed to post-production. That's what's amazing is that it's
done
right then.
Yeah.
You know, because
fascinating.
I've seen people who have created their own Star Wars type videos mm-hmm. where they've gone in and they've used some pretty sophisticated post-production video software
right.
to go in and paint an object, right, within the software and say, anytime you see this object, overlay this effect on top of it,
right?
Which is really sophisticated, and it tends to be way faster than the old way. Mm-hmm. But this is even faster. It's essentially instantaneous, which to me is phenomenal. So anyway, there are so many other hacks out there. If you just do a search online for Kinect hacks, you are going to find blogs and articles and yes. videos about amazing stuff people are doing with this basic piece of video game hardware.
Yeah, if you've done any yourself, please let us know. We'd love to hear about it.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, if you've got any information about Kinect hacks you've done or any videos or whatever, send links our way, because you know we'll be glad to take a look at it. And who knows, maybe we'll be able to post them up on Facebook and yeah. create even a gallery of things that people have done.
And that wraps up our discussion about the Kinect. And as I was saying earlier, since 2012, the Kinect has pretty much gone bye-bye. No one really talks about it anymore. No one's really developing for it anymore. And part of the reason for its failure was largely because there was an apparent lack of compelling content for the Kinect. There was initial interest in developing for it, and then it just kind of fell off. The challenges for developing for the platform were probably too great for the returns that were being seen. And there were a lot of games that kind of gave the Kinect a bad name. Games that gamers just didn't really, and I hate to use this word, connect with. And so it really just kind of floundered. It's also a shame that while it did very well in hacking circles for a while, Microsoft made some moves that made it harder for hackers to use the Kinect. And they were creating all sorts of really cool implementations of the Kinect sensors and using them for things like machine vision. And it was really compelling stuff. So it's kind of a shame that that fell apart too. But it also shows that often the hacking community will take stuff that was intended for one purpose and then repurpose it for something else and make something really incredible out of it. If you guys have suggestions for future episodes of Tech Stuff, send me an email. The address is techstuff@howstuffworks.com, or you can pop on over to our website. That's techstuffpodcast.com. There you're going to find an archive of all of our episodes, including these classics. You'll also find links to our presence on various social media platforms. You will find a link to our online store where every purchase you make goes to help the show, and we greatly appreciate it. And I'll talk to you again really soon.
Tech Stuff is a production of iHeartRadio's How Stuff Works. For more podcasts from iHeartRadio, visit the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to your favorite shows.
It's brand new season 2. I'm Marissa Thalberg.
And I'm Stephen Wolf Bedeta. And we're excited to be back having bigger, bolder, and always real conversations.
Straight from the C-suite front lines of marketing, media, and more.
We have great friends joining from people you may know, like Wilmer Valderrama and Bobby Burke.
And people you'll want to know. So grab a coffee or, hey, even an Aperol Spritz and come join us on America's number one podcast network, iHeart.
Listen to Brand New on the iHeart Radio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
The Therapy for Black Girls podcast is your space to explore mental health, personal development, and all of the small decisions we can make to become the best possible versions of ourselves. I'm your host, Dr. Joy Harden Bradford, a licensed psychologist in Atlanta, Georgia, and I can't wait for you to join the conversation every Wednesday. Listen to the Therapy for Black Girls podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts. Take good care, and we'll see you there.
I'm Johnny B. Good, the host of the podcast Creating a Con, the Story of BitCon. This podcast dives deep into the story of Ray Trapani and his company, CentraTech. I'll explore how 320-somethings built a company out of lies, deceit, and greed.
I've been saying since a very young age that I was going to be a millionaire. If someone's like, oh, what's your best way of making money? I'm like, oh, we should start some sort of scheme.
Listen to Creating a Con, the Story of BitCon on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Every family has an origin story, one passed down through the generations. Mine happens to be a mystery involving my great-great-grandmother left behind in Sicily. I'm Joe Piazza, and my new podcast will transport you to the gorgeous island of Sicily as I trace my roots back through a whodunit for the ages. Listen to The Sicilian Inheritance on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.